obviously an example of class legislation. If we can, by philosophical reasoning, get around the obligation there, why can't we get around all of them? All right. Yes, sir.
I'd like to add just this suggestion, that in the New Testament period, most virgins did not have control over whom they should marry. In some instances, they might, but that wasn't general. The parents or the guardian decided, but such wasn't true with reference to a widow. She made her own decision, and so she was told to marry only in the Lord. And I think all of us would advise virgins to marry in the Lord, though we don't have specific legislation as expressed that.
All right. Thank you so much. Yes, sir. Well, it's very true that the first part of it has reference to a special circumstance where Paul was showing that in the present distress that characterized the church, that it was better for one to be single, even though in that case he showed that there were exceptions even to that rule. But to say that the reasoning of the chapter would not apply today, I know of nothing in the passage that would justify that view. On that ground, to say that it... to eliminate its application to us today on the ground that it dealt with conditions that were peculiar to that time, everything in the Bible dealt with conditions peculiar to that time. And on that basis, well, we'd eliminate the whole of it. All right, somebody over here. Yes.
Well, concerning the confession being necessary before baptism, and I'd like to inject also that obligation of faith in the remission of sin. It's in my that experience of the last year and a half. Into this situation in Fairborn, Ohio, where one of the products of the preacher's school out of this state was thought that the confession was not necessary, and followed a great distinction, and also recently I'm still working with a group that's been prepared by the graduate of a college of this state, where the idea of staying in tradition is so focused, and it's a glorious thing.
Well, I agree with you that that indicates an unhappy trend. I have a question here. What is your judgment concerning the present? No, that's not it. Brother Woods, what is your opinion of the tendency on the part of some today to reflect unfavorably upon anyone who dares to make reference to or respect those who have in years past fought many hard battles for the ground we now occupy? Some of them do not hesitate to quote from modernists. Now look at a question here. Now just consider that one for a moment and listen to this one. Hand it in to me right here. Brother Woods, isn't it a dangerous trend to urge brethren to defend, quote, our position, unquote, to give to the next generation, quote, the church as we have known it, unquote, and to elevate the pioneer preachers, some of whom were in error on various questions, rather than to emphasize defending truth, promoting New Testament church, and so on? Now, the implication of that is that those men back there didn't have the truth and didn't teach it. Now, then, somebody stand up on their feet right now and tell me one fundamental doctrine they didn't teach. Stand up now and tell me one error that they advocated of a fundamental nature. Now, such statements as this literally disgust me, because it is a serious reflection upon some of the greatest and best men on earth. Were it not for those men, we might today ourselves be involved in denominational error or worse than that. And so... Yes, sir. You're exactly right. There's just one reason why matters of that type come up, and that's because those fellows recognize that the pioneer preachers and the older men stood for things that they no longer stand for, and therefore they got to get them out of the way before they can put these new ideas over. Well, there are a few of us still left.
Well,
Yes.
I don't have a great big library, but I have a real good library. And I have every one of Brother N.B. Hardin's Tabernacle sermons. And I think that they are excellent sermons today. I believe them to be true to the Word of God. I've been preaching about 20 years. And I believe that they need to be preaching out just as much as they did over in Nashville many, many years ago. And I hope that all of the boys are in college will buy every one of those that are available. I don't know whether they all are now or not. And if they can't do any better than just memorize them, they can leave out the part about you in the balcony and get along with them.
I agree with that sentiment 100%. I do indeed. I cannot refrain from narrating an incident that some of you have heard me relate before, but it is certainly apropos to this situation that we're discussing. Brother Hardiman, as you know, lived to be 91 and a half years of age. Until he was 90, he was quite active. Particularly during his 80s, he did a good bit of travel and preaching. Sister Hardiman would do the driving. They made many trips. On one of those trips west somewhere, they started out on Sunday morning. They stopped for church in a little town where the congregation was small, about 27 people present. Had a young man from a Christian college, not from this one, that was preaching there. When Brother and Sister Hardiman went in, he went back and introduced himself. And when Brother Hardiman told him that he was N.B. Hardiman, that didn't mean a thing to him. He said, "Are you a member of the church?" And on being told that he was, would he lead the prayer? He would indeed. After the service was over, he said they stood around a little bit. Nobody came and spoke to them. They got in the car and started off, and he turned to Sister Hardiman and said, "Well, we're not half as important as we thought we were." Now, here's the tragedy of that. There was a young man that didn't even know one of the greatest preachers of the past generation. Secondly, he never heard of the Hardiman Tabernacle sermons, which he ought to have by that time become thoroughly conversant with, using them as models. Thirdly, what's even more tragic, he was sitting in Bible, so-called Bible classes, where men of past generations were not even mentioned. Now, he could have told you about the doctrines of Tillich, who denied the resurrection, of Barth and Brunner and Kierkegaard and others. He had to outline them, but he didn't know one great gospel preacher from one generation past. Now, I ask you, friends, what will the church be like if it has to depend upon such characters in the next generation for its teaching? Do you wonder then that we put such emphasis upon these matters? And it's my earnest hope and prayer that Freed Hardiman College will recognize these facts and not allow herself to be moved from the positions that's characterized her through the years. That is her great glory. And the day that it ceases to be, it would be better for her if she closed her doors, and she just might as well do it if that's going to be the case.
Amen.
Is fasting so often mentioned in the New Testament required of Christians today? If not, why not? Well, in the first place, fasting was never commanded, that is, as an official religious act. It was in Matthew 5, 16 through 18, it's very clearly shown that it's simply a permissible act, that it's not to be an ostentatious act, not for display, and that it belongs particularly in those hours of trial and anxiety. And I'm quite sure that the same benefits that derived in the apostolic age from such fasting would equally apply today. Is it scriptural to establish a treasury in a Bible class through which to give to mission work and benevolent work? I don't think it's best to do that. I don't think it's scriptural to do that. I think it ought to be contributed on the Lord's Day, and the elders have the authority of disbursing these funds. Now, this next question, does this practice glorify God in the church for Jesus Christ? I think that implies, though, that anything that's not done in an official meeting on the Lord's Day is not done by the church. I don't subscribe to that view. But I think Christians can act to the glory of God and to the advancement of the church as individuals. But I still think that it's proper to do it as the New Testament teaches. What is your advice about the literature of the Brotherhood? Well, and just to get at it quickly, well, I would recommend that you use that type that I write. That's the only kind that I'll recommend right here. Now, there again is another thing. Today, there's a disposition to want to get away from what has been characteristic of us through the years, and there's a disposition on part of many congregations today to want to junk the methods that we formerly used. I was in a meeting a while back at a place, and off of the study was a storeroom, and there were just stacks and stacks of literature neatly arranged. And I said to the preacher, "What is this?" And he said, "Oh, that's a bunch of stuff that one of these specialists we had in here a while back got us to get when he got us to do away with the literature we were using in our Bible study and buy $700 worth of this stuff." And we did. We tried to use it 3 or 4 weeks, and the teachers all rebelled, and so we junked it and went back to our usual way of doing. Now, there's great danger today in some of the literature that's being used. There's literature that's got false doctrine in it. And the tragedy of it is that in many congregations where it's used, the brethren have never even looked into it, you see. No piece of literature ever ought to be put in any child's hands until some mature, capable person has looked through it and passed judgment upon it. You wouldn't want your children to have access to poison, literally. And yet some people will disregard the poison that's being fed them spiritually. Again, then, it gets back to the importance of adhering to what we know to be right. Yes, sir.
Would you comment on this new Testament commentary that's come out called the Living Word, I believe?
Well, I'll have to wait to see it. It's not out yet. But I haven't seen a copy of it yet. I know something about some of the men that are writing it. If they write like they've written in the past, well, I won't endorse it. All right, further. Well, our time's nearly gone. I don't believe we have time. Yes, sir. For another question. Well, at least you'll have to give the fellow credit for ingenuity in trying to sustain it. I used to debate a fellow by the name of F.G. Croswell, who was the ablest materialist debater in the country. He denied the existence of the spirit apart from the body. I would make an argument on Luke 23:43, where Jesus said, "Verily I say unto you, comma, today shalt thou be with me in paradise." He always insisted that the comma was in the wrong place. He said the way that it should read was this: "Verily I say unto you, today, comma, shalt thou be with me in paradise." That is, at some future time. Well, I, of course, would ridicule the idea. I'd point out, now that certainly makes the Lord resort to a ridiculous statement. That makes him say, "I'm not saying this to you yesterday, nor am I saying this to you tomorrow. I'm saying this to you today." Thank you.